Hello and welcome to Season 1, Episode 6 of the Adrian and Joe Show. This is, of course, the podcast about all things business analysis, business architecture, business change, and many, many, many more topics besides. It's raw and it's time-boxed. When the buzzer sounds at just 24 short minutes, the podcast will end. I'm Adrian Reed, and as ever, I'm joined by my friend and co-host, Joe Newbert. Joe, how are you doing today? And tell us, what can we expect from today's episode?
Hello, Adrian. I'm doing good, thank you. Today's episode, well, do you want to play a game? I've got three words for you, Adrian. Beautiful, good, and lean. What am I talking about?
So first of all, when you said, do you want to play a game, that reminded me of the 1980s film War Games, but the less said about my film trivia, the better. But beautiful, good and lean, I don't know, maybe a steak, medium rare? I don't know, Joe.
Okay, well, let me tell you, these are the words of our guest today, Collart Miles. He uses them to describe his ideal company. And again, let me stress, not the company you're probably thinking of, Adrian. What he means is a business or an organization. So let me tell you about Collart. He's the MD at a company called Collectively in New Zealand, which is a business growth community. He's also co-founder of Agile on the Beach, New Zealand. And he does what he does to help build beautiful businesses. Businesses that are prosperous, purposeful, and kind to people and planet. Welcome to the Adrian and Joe Show, Collart.
Ah, thanks for having me, gentlemen.
Yeah, we're really pleased you could join us. It's good to have you here.
It is good to have you here. And I want to go back to that introduction and some of those words. I mean, I'm a big fan of words, reading them and knowing their meaning. And that's quite a vision that you lay out there, one that I can definitely get behind. But can you tell us more about what makes a beautiful business? What does one look like inside and out?
Gosh, yeah, that's a really great starting point. I think for me, it's a response to, I guess, a conventional business that we all know very well. And I would start to dream about, well, what would a beautiful business look like? What would an attractive business look like? And for me, it sort of comes down to four dimensions. Purpose, prosperity, people and planet. So purposeful, a beautiful business for me would be one that has a noble cause, has an intention, it has a sense of purpose about it that you can really feel in its culture and how it shows up. It's prosperous, so it's prosperous for its staff, internal stakeholders, that sort of thing, but also prosperous for the communities that it operates in. So it generates some degree of prosperity, and it's kind to people and planet. I think those are sort of the main characteristics of what a beautiful business means to me.
I think that's a great idea for a company, particularly in this day and age. If I sort of cast my mind back to what I perceive business to be, I suppose, over the years, is one of really trying to have this level of effectiveness and efficiency, optimization. It's all these words that really focus around the bottom line. And you talk about prosperity, which is obviously a bottom line. It's about making something worthwhile. But I love the fact that you bring in the people, the planet, the community, and just a more holistic sense of purpose for things.
Yeah, it's like broadening the definition of value. Carry on.
Sorry, I was going to say, it's almost, and now I'm thinking of the business scorecards. You've got the four factors in there around sort of the financial aspects, the internal business process, the constant lifelong learning. But we almost need to have a fifth element of the scorecard here, which is this community, this purpose.
Yeah, I'd certainly support that. It made me think of a few examples that are kind of worth looking at, because I think this conversation is part of a much broader narrative for our society as we try to figure out what's next. And I guess in some sense, what got us to where we are now is really, you know, we should be honoring that, and it's strong. But is it, you know, there's a big question. Is it really the right shape for where we want to go next? I think that's a really broad sort of question to have around why would you want to have a beautiful business? And some examples, I guess, might be Patagonia. Are you familiar with Patagonia?
Yes, I am, yeah.
Yeah, I think they're one of the strongest examples for me. That I think they're probably an earlier meeting, ticking quite a few of those boxes. They are very prosperous, and they have a very solid business model, proven track record. Their people, the philosophy is kind of saturates people's daily lives as they work within the organization and around it. They're really well known for quite innovative and effective positioning on planet-friendly things, like they're even just down to the choice of the types of sports that they would support. So Yvonne Chouinard is the original founder. He wrote an amazing book called Let My People Go Surfing. and he sort of gives you a real insight into some of the early forming of that business and how it actually really was born from a cultural movement of the time, which was way ahead of its time. And I think that for me, there's a kind of a sense that that the future that we dream about is actually already here, but it's not evenly distributed. You know, so if you really look hard, you can often find little clues and elements that are glimpses of what might become much more mainstream and much more common in future. I don't know if that's sort of interesting. I think Patagonia is a really strong.
It is really strong, and I mean, if you go to their website, I mean, their headline there is "We're in business to save our home planet." I mean, that's the first thing you see. It's not "Please buy some hiking equipment or some trail running gear." It's about climate crisis on the Earth. I mean, it's a fantastic first thing to see, I think, for an organization.
And it's so interesting. You know, you would arrive at a site like that. It's got a very clear, distilled mandate that it's given itself, and yet there's this vibrant complexity and creativity, the storm around it, like that you would call community, right? Like there's this sort of hive of human activity around that simple, elegant purpose, which is, it's a really lovely thing. That to me is beautiful. It's an elegant idea, an elegant mission. And it gives rise to a lot of creative energy around it.
Well, that's really interesting. As you were speaking there, I was almost imagining that if there's a strong enough purpose, it sort of cultivates a community, right? Like, you know, there's a lot of talk about building communities and building culture, but actually maybe it's about having a really clear purpose that cultivates that. And sort of springboarding from that idea, what I'm really interested in is whether actually, I mean, if you think about purpose, because you mentioned, you know, purpose, prosperity, people, planet. Well, actually, in most organizations or any kind of complex system, there are going to be different people who ascribe different purposes to that thing. Is there an element of balancing some kind of equilibrium between different stakeholders who want different things out of the organization?
Oh, that's a great question, and I think it's it is a dilemma, right? That a statement like saving the planet or thinking different is really a symptom of a sense of purpose. It's not really the cause, is it? Mm. I don't look at the company slogan or the espouted value system to get a sense of what the culture is actually like. All you have to do is spend a bit of time working with the people, and you'll get a strong sense of the atmosphere and what, you know, the value system that's driving people. So I think this is my personal response to that, Adrian. I kind of get a sense that I would look more closely to the sense of purpose And it can be expressed in many different ways. I remember Tony Say from Zappos would talk about how important it is that I think it was Zappos actually, or it might have been Netflix in the Netflix culture handbook. But one of them, I stand corrected, but one of them was talked about how they didn't want to impose a strict set of values on their business, on their organization, but instead what they encouraged was to have a set of values. They said value having values. You know, don't take the kind of party line and become a drone that regurgitates and tries to emulate some set of values that are pushed from some central entity or top down. Cultivate a sense of what you value and express it, and value having values, which I thought was a really subtle and sort of more elegant position. So I think when you're around a very purposeful business, and the purpose is a kind of noble one, that it is taking humanity in the right direction, I think you can get a strong sense of that purpose being represented in different ways. And it's often, for me, surprising, it's often more the stories that are told around those cultures, rather than a textbook definition. This business exists for this thing, and you can see it, you know, sort of in the corporate communications rhetoric. But when you kind of peel back that layer and just hang out with teams, it's the stories they tell, and the failures and successes. It's you know, the questions that are being asked, the hot topics. So often you can get a sense of its orientation.
I love that. Like the stories, the narratives, almost the collective consciousness, the collective lived experience of the folks that are actually there. Sort of, again, building on these ideas, clearly, I mean, company performance is an important element as well. And a company's attitude to the world in which it resides has become so, so much more important in recent times for very, very good reasons. So how can a business bring more meaning and community to what they do? We've sort of touched on elements of this, but I wondered whether you had any other examples or any tips or tricks.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean, this is, I had the privilege of being part of large organization changes, you know, when they've sensed some existential threat, or they've become quite convinced that they need to shift and move in the different direction. And almost every case would involve some degree of, well, we need an innovation process. We need something that we can impose. We need to restructure. We need to change. And you know, all sorts of this sort of like a typical kind of meddling stance starts to emerge. And it was kind of fascinating to me in a recent experience about 3 years ago. I started working with one of New Zealand's largest banks who was facing and orientating in the same way. And it was a kind of a moment where I got a glimpse of what does the conversation around meaning mean. I remember at the time the World Economic Forum had released a few articles about how the Gallup surveys, like employee engagement surveys, were tracking a worrying trend that generally in workplaces, the sense of meaning that general staff have in the work that they do is diminishing over time. That their data was showing that in a lot of corporate environments, that the sense of meaning that you have in what you do is on the decline, and that's a really stark reality when you consider the implications of that. You know, so for me, when you look into how can I generate a stronger sense of meaning in my business, if I was a business leader, you know, I think that there's a couple of things I would make sure you get right from the start of that inquiry. And the one is that it's about people first. In New Zealand, in Maori culture, there's a very strong sort of wisdom or a tenet that goes, he tangata, he tangata, he tangata, which is basically says the most important thing is the people, the people, the people. And so if you're ever faced with having to respond, help an organization respond to circumstances shifting, then that would be my strongest advice, is to start with the people side. So examining where are the people at, what's their disposition, create space for conversation, create space for the important conversations. And I mean, this basically means that if a business had a more traditional stance and it had relied on really reliable, tried and tested processes and command and control and that sort of thing was what made them successful at that point. Facing change, you cannot go into it with a process-oriented mentality. So you kind of, in that spirit of putting people first, you also then have to adopt a different style of leadership. That makes different things possible. Is this resonating? Is it like?
No, it's absolutely resonating. And while you're saying these things, these words, meaning, purpose, and tried and tested process, command and control, and we've seen that stuff sort of diminish over the recent while because of the rising trajectory of sort of lean, agile product journeys, you know, and getting more people to be more involved, more collaborative, have more conversations, have a stronger voice. And one of the things that I've seen recently as well is putting more control into the hands of either business users, business decision makers, but also customers through things like no code. And I sort of see this trajectory, as I say, we've sort of gone lean, agile product away from this command and control. We're looking at customer journeys. And now we're empowering people with tools to be able to really sort of define what they want at the end of things. So, I mean, I'm not sure if you see that too, but how do you think the no-code revolution will further evolve the work that we do, sort of as business change people, business analysts, product managers, whatever we are? How will this shift things?
That's a really great question. I'm going to offer you the classic sort of agile practitioner's response, which is, it depends.
Fantastic answer.
And that, with that, we're done.
I'm finding it hard to predict a trajectory for no code. I've got to be straight up. I'm not too familiar with it, actually, as a trend. Do you want to tell me a little bit more about the revolution as it's forming for you? And perhaps I can relate to it in that way.
Sure. I think I'm going to use sort of some really like easy, mundane example here of WordPress, for example. It's about just putting the tools in the end user's hands, really. It's about, and through that, it almost cuts out the middleman, so to speak. You don't need teams of people and you have a lot more choice. But also in terms of that freedom, you have the freedom to change more often as well. So if you do something today and you don't like it, you can change what that looks like immediately. You know, you're not waiting for a project team to go away and build and change. So that would be an example in sort of IT software. Another example I can think of that's perhaps is more commercial, it is leisure, sports and leisure companies who allow the customers to change what their shoes look like, what their trainers look like in terms of colors or patterns and things. So really, I suppose no code for me, whilst it sounds quite technical in what it is, it's just about empowering people more directly and not making them wait and let them almost create their own destiny.
Just removing that friction and putting the power in the hands of the users.
100%.
You're making me think a lot about design and the role that design plays in the approach that we take. And I saw a quote recently, and it might be a really good one to kind of to put out there, is this this idea that design traditionally was the icing that you put on the cake. But I think in a world where, you know, if you have aspirations around the promise of no code, the promise of empowering customers to experience that value, and that your business organization is almost an afterthought. It's like you've removed yourself, or your business from the mechanical workings of their world, and really help them collapse the distance between that customer and the value that they're looking for. I think that you have to move something like design from icing to the flower. Like it has to become one of the more base ingredients to your approach, that your software developers in a way have to apply a design mindset to what it is that they're producing. I don't know if that's sort of helpful. That's my kind of one sort of thing. I think it also feeds into a broader, a much broader narrative around value streams, around improving the relationship and the connection, the customer experience. We hear that a lot. A good definition, working definition for customer experience for me is the sum of all the interactions that that customer has with your brand. So that kind of explodes the surface area of your brand, or that that experience definition, to much more than just the service or the interaction with the software. It explodes it out to how they experience your brand, even if somebody talks about it, or any number of interaction scenarios. And if those, the net, you know, you hope you would hope that their interactions are net positive, right? Like there's some goodness that that it leaves in the relationship, that it's worthwhile, and that people come back and tell others about it.
That really resonates with everything that really resonates with me personally. And as you were speaking there, Collar, I was thinking about how I've observed in some organizations the term customer experience is used, but when you boil it down, what they're really talking about is actually user interface design. And I, that frustrates me, because I'm thinking, but there's a much bigger holistic piece here. There's no point in having the fact that the customer has a beautiful experience when they order the product if the product is then delivered by a courier who doesn't give them a good experience. And just because they're external doesn't mean they're not part of the customer experience type of thing.
And that gives you a virtual cycle, doesn't it?
It does, and adding another layer on top of that, Adrian, I think it's a wonderful example, and so true, is often I've seen when companies do their customer experience journeys, they actually only cover their legs in that journey. And not the other activities that take place in between that help shape whether that customer comes back or not.
Absolutely, and I suppose springboarding from all of this, we should talk about innovation. It's a term that we've talked about a little bit, but I suspect with the clients we all work with, there's a constant cry of innovation. Like people talk about innovation or transformation or whatever people want to call it. So, I mean, how would you say that an organization can create or cultivate an organizational culture that actually lives it, that actually innovates properly? Tricky question.
Well, thank you for that. I think for me, in my experience, innovation tends to be a side effect of a vibrant and healthy culture. You know, you just have to look at, if I was a business leader, I would reflect on and say, monitor, try and observe for a while, just slow down and listen, and try and count the number of times that a new idea surfaces, and just what happens to it. You know, and if you're noticing that, you know, there's a couple of things that tend to happen is like in a culture where it's harsh. Oh, is that the alarm?
that is the alarm.
That is the alarm. Well, in a culture that, I'll keep it brief then, in a culture that creates a harsh environment for new ideas, you're not going to see the kind of innovation that people wish for. But in a culture where it's friendly to new ideas, and the act of executing on them, because I don't think there's any shortage of ideas particularly, but true innovation really is on how well they're executed and implemented.
It
becomes the telling part.
It does.
So fostering that, really, I'd say start with culture and start with people. And they will always pay off, you know?
I feel that we could probably record a whole podcast on just that topic, because as you were talking, I was thinking about topics like diversity and diversity of thought but fascinating. Thank you so much for this great conversation, Collar. Now I am certain that having heard you talk, having heard the really interesting ideas you've touched upon, people will want to follow you, get in touch. So what other resources are there? Where can our listeners go to find out more?
Oh, thank you for that. I run a small business networking business called Collectively, and it's about 14,000 small businesses. And on there, we've got a series of blogs and vlogs and that sort of thing. It's quite a vibrant community, so that's a good place. As a co-founder for Agile on the Beach, there are a number of channels there. We'd always welcome more audiences, especially across the world and in the circumstances where we find ourselves in. It's really helpful to be able to connect with communities across the world at this stage. So Agile on the Beach, New Zealand would be great.
That's wonderful. And you yourself, are you LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram? Do you have any social channels that you...
All of the above. You can actually find, I've got a personal site profile up called colartmiles.com. And that will get you the LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram accounts if you're interested. And it would be really, really lovely to connect up.
Lovely. Thank you. I mean, that was an inspiring chat, Colart. Really appreciate you coming on and talking with us about your worldly views. I'm sure, as Adrian said, everyone's going to be thinking a little differently about perhaps the way they do things now. And thank you for tuning in. We appreciate your support. If you think this podcast is a lean thing of beauty, please do pass the pod by sharing it with at least one person in your community who you think would get something good out of listening to it. And of course, you can keep the riff going by leaving your comments over on the blog at 168.fm. That's the words, 168, not the numbers. We'd love to hear what you think about building beautiful businesses and how we can play a part in shaping them. Colart, Adrian and myself will be there and join you. Until then, keep growing.